mean, changing the culture is fundamental to success of this initiative. And in answer to your question, every single HR policy that we review, all the recruitment processes, the employee specifications, when they're reviewed, it's with having a commercial approach in mind. Very early on, right at the start of this journey, and as Elizabeth said, it's only probably 15 months since we started this with any real purpose and energy. We chose to decide what being more businesslike meant for our local authority. And we split it into these themes, which I'll go through briefly. So the first one is what we've termed knowing our business. Do you actually know how much it costs to run our services? The services that do trade with other local authorities, with grounds maintenance that trades with other parishes. Do we actually know if that work's priced correctly, whether we're making money or losing money? So a starting point was, do the key people in the budget holders know the true costs, the proper costs? Second thing was reviewing our fees and charges. That was done once we knew our business costs.
I'm just intrigued to know whether the costs were at all accurate or inaccurate when you actually
looked at it. It's a mixed bag, as you would expect. Yeah. I mean, another reason for doing that is to make sure that you're not making money where you shouldn't be making money.
Right.
Some services, like licensing, you can't be making surpluses. So it's making sure your fees, your charges are accurate.
Right.
And making sure that your charging strategies, whether whether from a political point of view, you decide that pest control, for example, I know you don't charge for many of your pest control services. If that's a decision you make, then you would attach a charging strategy to that service where you're happy that it's subsidised by the general fund. So that's all within that theme of knowing your business and reviewing your fees and charges. If you decide that no longer are Charnwood happy with a subsidised pest control service, it has to meet its costs, then you inform the relevant members of staff and they'll review their fees and charges.
So Neil will talk about it later, but under the knowing our business theme, a piece of work that was undertaken with budget holders and finance was the establishment of snapshot trading accounts so that the services could understand exactly what their costs were and what their pricing strategy should be. So that was quite a big chunk of work last year, wasn't it? And your services all went through it.
Yeah, I'll touch on that in a couple of slides of time. Promoting and encouraging investment. That's already been talked about in quite a lot of depth by Rushcliffe. Making the most of our assets. Again, just to emphasise, we are at a very early stage in terms of our asset management strategy and our investment strategy. But it's exactly the same themes. It's working out what we're doing with our current assets. It's about acquiring new assets, the right assets, and it's about disposal of assets that are not working for us. Understanding our customers, we feel is key. We don't want to do anything that would not be that doesn't have the customer at the centre of our decision making, and marketing the services is also a key part of the work. All of these themes, which they were worked through, resulted in an action plan being put together probably 12 months ago now, and that fed into the current year's service delivery plan. So the current year is the first year where we have had commercial related activity within it. Recognising that there is no monopoly on a good idea. This was key when we decided, or when we formulated our processes for creating and developing a good idea. We didn't want this to be something that was dominated by the senior management team. We feel that it's everyone within the organisation has got a key role to play when making the local authority more commercial. Investing to save where there's a clear business case, and I'll touch on some of the tools that we've developed to develop a good idea into a full project management framework. Supporting our staff to develop the skills, we've developed a training programme, which again I'll go into in more detail in a second, and understanding that every company counts, as Elizabeth's already said. So these are our core principles that we have in mind when undertaking our commercial work. So the values of the council are there, they're being reviewed, but they won't change too much. The words will change, but it's principally they're the same. Being proactive, so being innovative and commercial isn't something we do on top of the day job. It is the day job. It's a different way of working. Putting the customer first, or at the centre of our decision making, I've already said. Risk, I know you wanted to touch on, it's very difficult to define risk. And our ethos there is just to remember that this would have been touched on this evening. We probably can't be as agile as the private sector, and our decision making is not purely based on a commercial approach. We have to bear in mind why the local authority exists, what our role is. Okay, so this all of these slides, or these last couple of slides and the next few, are taken from the commercial strategy that was approved just over a year ago. These are quite bold statements, deliberately bold statements. We can do anything we want within our existing governance structures. So the message here is, let's talk about this. If you've got an idea, talk to your manager about it. Some things we can just get on and do. The default here is we can do it, not we can't do it. So it helps with the change in the culture of the organisation. So moving on to risk and help define our risk appetite, we came up with a decision-making framework here. Most of it was already in existence. So if we start on the left, these are the low-value, low-risk decisions. As you'd expect, they're made by officers, individual officers, by teams. As you move towards the right, and the value and the risk increases, you have more governance to those decision-making processes. The two new steps in that decision-making process are the think tank project team, which I'll talk about on the next slide in more detail. And that is our engine, that's our group of individuals that consider ideas and help develop this new culture within the organisation. And the J2SS board, the Journey to Self-Sufficiency board, which is chaired by one of our directors. So they're the two new steps within the governance of the local authority. So moving on to the think tank in a little bit more detail. This is our group of individuals and the membership. So it's 10 to 12 officers, that's typically around the size that we have. It's not hierarchical. It consists of heads of service. It consists of frontline officers. It consists of manual staff, of professional staff. Rotating chair. So this is consistent with the culture around. Everyone's got a part to play. Anyone can come up with a good idea. We did come up with a skill requirement.
So this is essentially your kind of screening process for the business planning side of things.
Well, the group, their focus will shift a little bit over the next 12 months, but initially they were the group of people who got things off the ground, and you'll see a slide showing all the work that's gone over the last 12 months. Mm. So they've, as I said on the right hand side, they've done bits of work. So we supported the review of fees and charges, we've done some work on branding, skills programme, etc. They've been a sounding board, so if somebody's popped up with an idea in the organisation, they can email any person in this group, and that these people will commit to spending 10, 15 minutes, or however long it takes, talking through an idea or supporting an idea from start to finish. So officers will work across different bits of the organisation, not in their service areas, they may work with people they've never worked with before, it doesn't matter, because we're all just trying to get a thing done. They absolutely can be a gateway to provide advice on the routes to get things done.
I was going to ask if there are gates, because there's a gate. There's two sides to a gate, of course. A gate also closes things down.
Yeah.
In the traditional NPD model, new product development model, it's deliberately closing down projects that don't work. Does the think tank do that as well? Or does it? Is it there just to help people out?
Yeah.
If you come with an idea that... it's probably not the best thing to spend council resource on, they will advise that. And there are some models that we ask them to complete so that the group have read that their idea before they present.
Correct. Yeah.
But what you'll find is you'd be surprised by some of the people that got the hand up. Mm. And as Elizabeth said, you've got people that are working with each other sometimes for the first time. Yeah. So I know that the role's on the right hand side there, but the role is changing slightly now as we're moving from a building the blocks, building the framework phase to delivery phase. The role is more around scrutinising ideas. As Peter says, the skilling, the upskilling, the training of members and officers is key to this. This, and we can, so you've got the slide, but this provides the training that everybody has been through at the local authority. We've got 8 training courses there. Part 1, they were all delivered in-house. They are going to be repeated. Most of them were oversubscribed.
Do let us know and give us a cost. We may well be interested.
Mm.
Okay. So the first one there is about selling. So that was delivered by our legal team manager about the law of selling and companies. Change, procurement, decision making, knowing your markets and selling, writing a business case, just split into a number of different modules. Okay, so this gives you a flavour of the journey, some of the specific tasks that we've been engaged in over the last 15 months. So we started off with a staff survey. We defined what being more business-like was for us, and we developed this commercial strategy and got that approved by Cabinet. That led to the think tank being devised, and that first met around 12 months ago, just over 12 months ago. The project governance was established, and we at that point started to generate ideas. And there were 60 initial ideas generated and discussed by the think tank. PIDs were agreed for some of the pieces of work, and the work on fees and charges review and the fees and charges policy started at that point 12 months ago. The commercial skills course that I've just showed you the previous slide, that was developed in March and delivered in started to be delivered in April, it was delivered over the summer. 23 of those initial 60 ideas managers and heads of service took forward to be included within the current year's service planning. So those 23 ideas are most of them are progressing well. So some examples are these are small incomes, but this is very much the culture of how we're going to solve this from income generation, around lots and lots of small ideas. £1,500 on graphic design from Melton, £40,000 saved on a contract relating to public advertising, notice and advertising. So in June, we changed the think tank a little bit as we started to develop the commercial guide. July, we had a change in the way we manage and monitor performance. So we integrated the commercial work into the performance monitoring. And as Elizabeth said, a key piece of work for understanding our costs with the snapshot training accounts. And I can speak on a personal level about this because I was the pilot that went forward. My area is environmental health. I felt that I had quite a good knowledge of my budgets before undertaking the exercise. Turns out it wasn't as good as it should have been. I now know which areas of the service I needed to increase the fees and charges and what that percentage needed to be. I know there's areas of service where licensing, for example, is split into different aspects of licensing. Some fees are statutory, some fees are locally set. For the first time, we separated out the cost centres so that I had a good understanding of the alcohol side of the licensing, of the taxi side of the licensing. And the budgets were never broken down into that level of detail before. And I know my colleagues have benefited from that exercise and that knowledge of exactly where they're making money and where they're not.
I'm going to start wrapping up, if you don't mind.
That moves on to Elizabeth to talk about the commercial things.
So, as Lee said, this was one of the key outputs of the work that we've done over the last 12 months, which was to provide offices in the organisation with access to a toolkit. So, back at base on our intranet, this is an interactive tool that you can click through to get to various different documents and pieces of guidance to help you work out whether you take an idea forward or not. And what we've done is have this ideas test stage, which was from feedback from offices. People don't want to spend too much time worrying about something that's not going to work. So a fairly relatively quick and easy piece of work involving three documents, a quad of aim, strategic fit and a financial sense check can be undertaken with support from think tank members if offices need it. And that gets you to a yes or no situation. Now, a message that we've been really clear about with our teams is it's okay to fail quickly and efficiently. That's absolutely fine, and that's arguably that's not a failure.
No. You mean to fail in the process of getting the idea through, or you mean to fail in the process of getting the idea through and then it not being a commercial success?
I think in terms of getting the idea off the ground. So if you've had an idea and it's not going to fly, fine. Move on. Don't flog a dead horse, effectively.
Sure.
It's filtering out the no papers.
Quite.
Before you join the work on them.
Exactly.
But not making them feel like no horse.
Exactly, yeah. But, and we're doing new stuff that we've not done before, so let's work this out. The next slide, then, if you want to. Thank you. If you go down the yes arm, then there's a bit more information there about common mistakes, business case documents, and marketing strategy. And behind that, there's the training slides, there's legal advice and legal notes and things like that, and also access to the corporate project management toolkit for those ideas that get off the ground in a substantial way. So, one of the questions we were asked to think about was, has it worked? I think we can say that what we've, things that were already happening have been enhanced and improved. So Lee's talked to you about a better awareness of services on the cost of running their services. Service areas have been able to, so legal services, for example, we've been providing services for other councils, academies and further education for a while. We've been able to develop and enhance our marketing approach to that as a result of this work, which has been beneficial. New ideas have definitely come forward. So we've had ideas around selling services of drones to the local authorities, ideas coming from environmental health and the street cleansing and environmental team that have been successful. One of the best bits for me has been around the virtual team and the think tank. That's been absolutely brilliant. It's been a complete pleasure and joy to work with people that I've never worked with before, and just be able to see some people do things they've never tackled and make a success of it has been really gratifying. And I think, would you agree with that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And it also increases your knowledge of aspects of the local authority that you didn't know about. So from a personal development point of view, you'll notice people really use this as an opportunity to enhance their own profile and to develop their own skill set.
We've got access to improved resources now, and they're available to everybody. We've got lots of work has happened, and we've got a clear approach on our fees and charges, the trading accounts, and very usefully the asset and investment appraisal tool that we've been using part of it. There's a feeling of more confidence from officers now, I think, whether it's a big project or a small project, about being able to tackle some of these things. They know where to go, who to talk to, where to start to look for things to get something moving in their mind. And I think it's enhanced the approach to some of the large commercial property and regeneration schemes that we've been tackling over the last 12 months. We've bought some properties, are in the process of buying properties in Colville. We've been able to use the asset investment tool. It's a different format, but a similar approach to the tool that Rushcliffe shared earlier. So, lessons learned. I suppose it's the difference between failure and learning. And the point we made earlier about fail quickly and efficiently, that's absolutely fine. And I think there's a bit more work for us to do around services, identifying what being more business-like means to their individual service. So there's quite a lot of work done at a corporate level, but services will all have naturally a different view about what it means for them, and so that's part of the work the think tank are going to start talking about next week when we meet, is looking at the results of this year's service planning as we've got thus far, and just being clear that each service understands what they are doing over the next 12 months. There can be naturally tensions around commercial public sector ethos and political aspirations, so there'll be things that members want to do, that's absolutely fine, that officers might say, well, is that truly a commercial opportunity, and you've got to try and find the way through the middle of that. Risk appetite is a thing that, it's, as Lee said, it's difficult to define, and we've been challenged as part of our peer review process that we had last year to define that better in the organisation, so that's something that the think tank will be picking up as well and helping with that. So, top tips. Really importantly at the beginning, define what it means for Charnwood. What do you want commercial to mean for this organisation? And it isn't necessarily what we've said, it isn't necessarily what Rushcliffe have done, it's what's right for Charnwood and the community. Consider the building blocks that need to be in place. Think about the culture of the organisation. Is that a culture where this kind of thing might be successful, where your aspirations for commerciality will work? Think about your delivery mechanism. How do you want to get this stuff off the ground? Think about trying to make it business as usual. So we've had quite a push over the last 12 months, haven't we, of this is a new thing, this is how we need to be thinking, and now what we're trying to do is make it just feel like the day-to-day, this is how we all work. And part of that is about getting it embedded in service planning, and part of it's around the comms for it as well. Sounds obvious, but a top tip, encourage officers to think and members to think about the net income position, because it's no good spending £20 to earn 10. Not all income is necessarily good income. I'm sure Simon will agree with that one. Yes.
Fully agree with that one.
Yeah. And absolutely a clear communication plan so the organisation understands what your view is on commercialisation and what you're going to be doing about it and when. So I hope that's been helpful, Chair.
It has, very
Chair,
much
I'm
so.
Going to have patrols, sorry.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor. Any questions from our colleagues from Michael's Leicestershire?
Yeah. You used the term PID, and I wondered whether you regard each of these 23 as projects, separate projects, that you use a project management system, or...?
Not necessarily. No. We've tried to be a bit fortunate about it. If an idea can just be done, so going back to Lee's continue on with decision making.
Yeah.
We're still thinking if you can just do it, you can just crack on with it, just do it.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't want a project manager
sometimes they just go on forever and never get.
Yeah, but there is absolutely a place for project management.
Yeah.
It's about agility and risk management. I had a pest controller that retired unexpectedly. Last year, I made a really quick decision. Within 3 months, the service was contracted out.
Yeah.
Saved quite a lot of money, retained the existing quality. Fees were charges to customers were protected and unaffected. That wasn't planned. That was the right people, the right knowledge, the right skills. So
yeah.
I knew from the snapshot trading accounts that pest control was losing a lot of money. We corrected it when we were given an opportunity.
Thanks.
I think part of, if I could just come back to one point I was going to mention, Chair, part of what we've done is around the empowerment in the organisation, just letting people get on. And a little bit of that, and as consciously we've made this, I thought you ought to show you.
Yeah,
Sorry, Lee, can I block you out?
Yes,
it's, so we've developed this corporate branding thing, which Lee mentioned earlier on. And so we've created a suite of colours that team managers and services can pick from, and then we can provide them with a variety of things. So there's a theme to our branding, but actually services might want something that, you know, so these colours have been analysed as being something that's suitable for technology services by our comms team.
Yeah.
Waste services naturally in green. Yeah, so there's a theory behind all this, but team managers are able just to say, I'd like to have this suite of marketing collateral coming and just go off and get on with it. So that's part of letting them own it a little bit. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thanks, Ron. It's really fascinating. I think particularly what we take away is your wonderful thing, which is unique. No one's mentioned that. I don't think. Where did you come up with the idea?
My head.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I'd observed in my authority and others sometimes what happens with a very top-down approach from the management team and people sometimes feeling things are being done to them. And I just thought, how can we just, and I had an initial conversation with you, didn't I? How can we turn that around? Why can we just do it differently? Why would management team have all the answers? I kind of think that might be slightly, not wanting to do myself down, but it's a bit of a flawed approach. You know, everybody's got a view, and that's been the best thing. We've really seen some great stories come forward.
It sounds a bit like a sort of Six Sigma expert team.
I don't know what that means.
Well, with Six Sigma, often enough, there's experts inside the organisation who pull together to help everybody else deliver whatever it is that they need to deliver.
Right.
A sort of continuous improvement process. But, yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very kind
of you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Okay, so. Next item is the question session with the Leader of the Council. Sorry about this.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to disappear off in a few minutes because I've got a child at home on his own. I'm literally, unfortunately, it's going to be 5 minutes and I'm going to have to rush. Simon's obviously here as well to... any sort of detailed questions. I know, helpfully, you sent through some sort of principal questions, so more than happy to actually sort of try and go through some of those, which might help on some of the points that you're going to cover. Do you want me to do that?
Yes.
Yeah? Is that okay? So you started off by talking about considering assets across the borough, for instance, clusters of garages, open spaces, Shelthorpe, for instance, etc. So, in broad terms, a lot of these have been considered. So, for instance, Shelthorpe was one of those that had been a suggested site when we were looking for a cemetery. So, actually, there was a fair amount of work that was actually done on Shelthorpe as far as rationalisation of the existing golf course there. You know, does it actually work well? What's the income? What's the expenditure? So, some of these sites have had recently quite an extensive analysis. Others probably less so. So, for instance, the garages are ones that are under active consideration, and certainly We're not the only authority that has a problem with garages. I was talking to the leader of Sherwood Forest, Newark and Sherwood Council only yesterday, and they're going through exactly the same exercise. They're trying to work out through their utilising the HRA account to try and actually work out whether they can actually build on some of these assets. Some of them are more problematic than others, but it's certainly something we're reviewing at the moment. We've got part of the drawdown from the reinvestment reserve, which went through Cabinet in October, was a sum for specific consultancy work on reviewing some of the things that we're actually looking at, or the chief executives are currently looking at as far as the transformation. One of those is actually an individual who is a property consultant. He has started work pretty well this side of the new year.
Yeah, he's working now. His first day in the office is next Monday, actually.
Indeed. So he's been looking at, or his task is to actually look at all of our assets to try and work out whether there is a unrealised value in not only in development terms for us as an authority. So for instance, I know Councillor Bolton, you touched on the issue about council housing, but it's also housing in general, which is actually, you know, do we have assets that actually could be used for other purposes that we as an authority may have an ambition for, or actually are these things that could be realised in financial terms for the benefit of the authority as a whole? In other words, are we absolutely convinced that what we've got can't be used better by rational thinking or by lateral thinking or just by some scratching of the head and having somebody with a fresh pair of eyes looking at what we've got? So they're going through that at the moment, and it's something that I've been pretty keen that we do for a period of time. That's a piece of exercise or a piece of work that's currently being done, and I said that's linked through the drawdown from the reinvestment reserve. As far as the next question is concerned, which was actually to do with making money more commercially and efficiencies internally, again, touch on the chief exec. He's initiated quite a wide-ranging transformation program. That's something I don't know whether he talked, what sort of level of detail he talked about it when he talked to the panel recently. But that's, in principle, it's trying to actually carry out some service reviews. I know a lot of councillors have mentioned you know, whether there's silo thinking between departments, etc. So one of the things that we're looking at, it was interesting actually seeing Northwest comment on branding. So one of the things that we've actually just started, and I've just been looking at the some of the initial proofs that's coming out of on the branding side, is actually rationalising in exactly the same way that Northwest have been doing, rationalising some of the appearances, for instance, of our organisation. To try and make sure that people see us as a single entity rather than actually a whole series of separate departments providing different services, providing different different services. A lot of that is about trying to actually get the organisation thinking as a single entity. So part of that is the sort of transformation program. But it's also about service reviews. It's also about some process re-engineering. I think a lot of the points that you've touched on, I think, are actually things that you know, Rob and myself are in absolute full agreement, you know, it's important that you actually just don't sit there. I mean, we've just been talking about some tweaks on the Constitution. Actually, some of the things that they're actually written into constitutions are actually been there for best part of 15 years. It's important to actually not get into thinking just because it's always been like that, you carry on doing it. And to sometimes be quite bold about saying, you know, come on, you know, 15 years ago it might have been appropriate, maybe it's not appropriate now. So those sort of points. The MTFS shortfall and returns on investment. So that came up obviously at full council last night. So that's been going through a fair amount of discussion over recent period. Again, likewise, we are using some of the reinvestment reserve to bring in somebody who's had previous experience of this type of investment to make sure that we get professional and proper advice. It's not something that we haven't done it before internally. We will have obviously opinions about that, but it's quite useful having somebody who's actually gone through this with another local authority successfully, who can help us not only with understanding the sort of approach to actually take to maximise returns, but also some of the practicalities about how we function, how we can actually make decisions in a timely fashion that respond to some of the investment decisions that we're going to have to be making. There was a point last night about bringing all decisions back to council. With all the will in the world, anyone who's ever bought anything in their life, whether it's a house or whatever, there comes a point when actually you have to just make a decision, and we need to make sure that constitutionally we have a process that's fleet of foot but also constitutionally sound, and accepting the fact that we're going to have to make decisions sometimes without having the whole of council being consulted. But the main aim of this is to actually maximise returns, to plug the holes that we know we're going to get from simple government funding. And it does, again, I know, Paul, we've had discussions about sort of different thinking on commercialisation. So I think, and it was interesting actually catching some of the Northwest discussion, and having had many meetings with the leader at Rushcliffe, I know they have a similar sort of approach, which is actually commercialisation is a state of mind. It's not just something you just do as a transaction. It's a whole service approach to how we respond to residents, how we actually operate internally, how we respond as councillors. I think the investment in commercial property, to be frank, is a straightforward, how do we actually get some money to plug the gaps that we know are going to exist. It is a commercial approach in the basis that we're looking at commercial property, but I don't think it's commercialization as such, and I think there is a difference between the two. So I do think the issue about the 10 million, if this is successful and we're able to actually invest property successfully to actually bring in some income to actually plug the holes, I don't think 10 million is probably where it will stop, because to be frank, if it works, then we probably need to do some more, because our hole is of a quantum that 10 million on 3-4% yields is not going to be enough to actually plug the hole. But the principle at the moment, because to be frank, if we'd come to full council, I would feel very uncomfortable coming to full council going, right,
I want 50,
and I think council quite rightly would also feel quite uncomfortable about this. So we need to make sure that throughout the whole of this process that we are comfortable, that we feel that we're in control, and that the risks are being managed, albeit we know that inherently there is always going to be a risk attached to any investment, whether it's actually with a bank or whether it's actually with commercial investment on property. And the reason why we're looking at commercial investment over other types of property, mainly because certainly we, from all of the conversations I've had with other authorities through the district council network and elsewhere, every single one has said, for God's sake, don't go anywhere near retail. Mm-hmm. Because the authorities that are actually invested in retail, often they invest in their own authorities. Often it's in shopping centres that, to be frank, are being invested in because for political reasons rather than actually commercial reasons, and they end up actually losing money and they don't actually benefit their community in the process. So we are looking at investment within Charnwood as a separate programme, and we brought that paper to Cabinet about a year ago, and that's to do with more general investment within the area, and obviously we've got the town to fund in addition. But the commercial investment portfolio is about raising money to plug the hole, and that's the main focus. And as far as the property type, avoiding retail, we'll look at industrial and we'll look at commercial in form of offices, etc. But it has to be on the basis of being good tenants having an understanding about the reliance of the whatever's happening inside the building, and making sure that again it produces the returns that we're expecting, rather than actually being slightly too ambitious or not ambitious enough. So that analysis will carry out. As I said, we're in conversations with somebody who's been doing this before to make sure that we have the criteria set out that hopefully we can actually use other people's experiences for our benefit.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the chap you've taken on temporarily, I believe,
yeah,
has already worked with the chief exec, so already a degree of trust there about his level of judgment.
Indeed, and this is something that, again, you know, you need to actually know that the person that's giving you advice is actually giving you good advice. So, that's why it's important to, prove somebody who's got a back history with us as an organisation. So talked about property, talked about the type of unit, making sure that we've got good covenants, making sure that we've got reasonable leases, making sure that the tenants are, as far as we can work out, good tenants, and hopefully the yields will enable us to feel comfortable about taking this a bit further if and when we've invested the first 10 million. So there was conversation about other type of commercial income generating schemes. Sustainable energy has been mentioned. We are looking at potential sites for a solar farm. We don't have huge, I mean, unlike the county council who went around buying farms a few years back, probably quite a sharp move with hindsight, but at the time was probably raised a lot of eyebrows. We don't have a huge amount of acreage, but we do have some, and we are looking actively at that to make sure that it complements whatever uses are currently there at the moment. But as far as investment in other types of commercial activity, I think we've been quite clear that we feel uncomfortable investing in a business. Property is one thing, because property can't go bust. It's still an asset there. Even if the tenant goes bust, if you're investing in the business, you could lose everything. So again, it's about trying to actually understand the risk and mitigating as far as possible sort of some of the downsides of any investment decisions. But certainly solar farm is something that we are actively looking at the moment, and hopefully we'll be able to bring forward some details soon.
That seems like something that we could do in association with Loughborough University, because they've got a renewable energy technology department.
I couldn't possibly say.
Yeah, they've got an engineering division.
They have. So they have, interesting enough, actually, Loughborough University have not actually built any solar farms, despite the fact they actually are a significant landowner. And it is an interesting question, because, for instance, with their enterprise zone land, they are looking to actually invest over a significant period of time. There are, because of the paybacks on solar farms, to be frank, if I was them, I would be looking at some of their land assets, certainly some of the later phasing, because actually in the sort of 10 years or so that they expect it to be fallow until they start building on it, they could probably actually invest and produce a solar farm in that period of time and actually earn money at the same time. So, but we are talking to them and others about how we can actually introduce something that actually makes sense for us as an authority. And again, our time frames are a lot different to, I mean, we're not looking at land that's going to be traditionally developed in the same way that the university are, but it is important that we actually try and work out what we can actually get in the way of assets. I mean, there have been conversations about putting panels etc. on this building, but to be frank, it's not particularly practical, and also this building is not exactly a young building in its own right, and at some point we're going to have to consider
decamp.
It was a serious amount of work to this or decamp. So we're looking at something that's a lot more long-term, but hopefully we'll come up with some stuff soon for councillors to look at. commercial property short-term strategy for income generation. So, I mean, partly the last question, or the question seven, I think, you know, income stream, I've talked about the investment in property. I think it is important to see how that goes. But I think once we've started down an avenue of actually being quite creative about income stream, then hopefully actually there's a mindset, and this is partly where the commercialization as a mindset comes in as well. I think there should be a mindset, hopefully, where people start thinking about, you know, actually what are our residents, what do they expect from us? Pest control was mentioned, an example, and pest control gets mentioned constantly over the years. There are some things that actually to charge for some services, interesting point about sort of net versus gross income, there are some charges that, to be frank, by the time we've actually charged, it costs us probably more to reclaim the money, especially with debt collection and everything else. So we are always very careful and very, we go through the business case about making sure that charges are appropriate and that they are relevant, and also that they are the sort of charges that if we are going to levy them, it's on the basis that we're not a monopoly, therefore we're not effectively controlling a service provision that otherwise people should expect as part of their council tax, but also that we're not necessarily putting private business out of business by actually having a monopoly over a service area or geographic area, and therefore using our weight to muscle in on what is actually a already performing private sector. Now, that might be a political view. I think it's quite important that actually the private sector and us work together rather than necessarily us muscling in and actually trying to push them out. But as I said, that's partly a political view as well. But income stream is going to be increasingly important. I mean, Northwest are blessed, I don't know if they mentioned it, with huge quantities of business rates, which they are very, very lucky to have over the last few years, and has enabled them to actually do lots of things that, to be frank, most authorities have not been able to do in the last few years. But they are working towards self-sufficiency. It would be lovely to be in a position, even here in Charnwood, where we can actually not look at central grants every single year with trepidation, that we could actually eventually be in a position where we're not wholly reliant on them. So we shall see. We shall see. That's I'm certainly an ambition. Councils, entrepreneurial. So I come back to state of mind. Last question. I think it's absolutely important that as an organisation we understand what we mean by commercialisation. It is also about making sure that all departments, I mean, it's interesting the reference to think tanks, but the fact that departments support each other as far as some of the services. So we have, good example, we have some officers who may work in one team, but actually could, and many of them already do, could quite easily be able to actually support some of the activities of another team. Now, some of those barriers to maybe doing that at the moment might be technology. Some of them may well be that, you know, some of the services contracted out and some of them are actually internal. But as a mindset, if somebody thinks that something could be done differently internally, then we as an organisation should be completely upfront about listening and trying to work out whether actually that is something that could be done. So I can't remember who it was now. I've got a feeling it was East London's Airport, one of the DHL, and it was somebody who worked on the ground, I think waving in the cargo planes, and he worked out that there was a slightly different sequencing for the way that DHL processed the planes that came in, the cargo planes, Eastman's Airport, and it saved them hundreds of thousands of pounds per year in fuel charges because of the slightly different sequencing, and as a result they burnt less fuel and while they were taxiing, and therefore, as I said, it was in hundreds of thousands. And DHL operate a system where there are some shared rewards on savings that are actually enacted. But certainly the saving that they had was many, many times more than any of the bonuses that they actually gave to the guy who came up with the idea. But actually, he still works with DHL. He's still a valued employee, and was very pleased that actually his ideas were taken up, and that they benefited the organisation as a whole. So yeah, to have that sort of mentality here at Charnwood, I think would be fantastic. And I think we have a huge number of staff who absolutely want to see the best for the organisation and residents, and we work incredibly well together across all sorts of fields. But wherever there are barriers that are actually there historically or that are perceived, hopefully from the top down and with support from the bottom up, we've got opportunities to actually break those down and work better as an organisation.
Any quick questions for the leader of the council before I let him go?
I was going to say, apologies.
I think he needs to go.
I've probably got the remains, charred remains of a house, and still a small child with on his Xbox.
But I think you gave us very fairly full responses to that anyway. So thank you very much for that.
At any point, if anyone, and I know Jill's contacted me recently about something else, but at any point, anyone wants to come in and have a chat, go for a coffee somewhere, more than happy to do so on almost any issue.
Thank you.
That's okay. Could you remind me? I owe you a coffee.
Thanks very much, Castle. I want to item 8, updated by the strategic director of corporate services. Simon, over to you.
Thank you. Just to actually just maybe expand on that slightly in terms of forthcoming reports we can expect to see. So there's a report called Capital Strategy, which is wide ranging, which is due for Cabinet in February, so we're just literally finalising it now, which covers things. It covers treasury management, but it does actually also cover a little bit more. It gives a little bit more detail on investment property, and does indeed sort of outline the fact that the portfolio is potentially going to be expanded. Obviously, it will depend on how it goes over sort of year two, year three, and then it sort of goes through what that, the implications of what that would be in terms of borrowing, etc. So it gets a little bit, there is some technical material in there, but it does actually, hopefully it will outline some of the things we are intending to do around commercial property in particular, also some of the changes to treasury management actually to sort of increase term limits, and so for example it will propose that we will allow lending to other local authorities, which gives a better rate of return in money market for sort of 5 years rather than 2 years. Whether we necessarily do that will be a question of opportunity as and when it arises, but it's that sort of thing that will be in there. And also,
what would we get for that, Simon?
What would we get?
Yes. Well,
it will depend what's on offer at a particular day in time. So every day we have the opportunity to lend to other local authorities or to place money with various accounts, just, and obviously it depends on how much we've got, security, liquidity, etc. But other local authorities might pay sort of somewhere between 1.4 up to maybe 2%, depending on the duration, which compares to sort of, you know, the money market overnight, sort of 0.3, 0.4, and then other short-term funds are sort of 0.8, 0.9. So it is better. And the capital strategy will also propose some changes to the constitution to some of these issues that Councillor Morgan referred to, and to increase our decision-making process. And then that's due to come in February, and then there is the intention to bring to Cabinet in March some more detail around commercialisation. So we'll cover many of the topics that the panel's looking at, and also I think we will outline the process by which commercial property will be evaluated. So some of the questions I think you asked of the leader about what properties will we take, etc. I think there's a question for me about to what extent would we focus on square footage. I think there, in terms of some or a lot of those questions, we would look to be answering those in the paper. I think we've referred to the chief executive's former colleague at Ashfield, and I think he would be heavily involved in designing the process for us. So which would obviously be based on the tried and tested Astfield method. So that's sort of what you can expect. And I think we've got then there was a specific question that I was asked, and I think I've pulled something together on, which is around why commercial property and sort of the evaluation. And I'm failing to find a relevant bit of paper.
Page 11.
Oh, here we go. So I think fundamentally it's why commercial property. So if you've had a chance to read these, but really it's about scale. So we need to do these things relatively quickly. I think, again, speaking with Chief Executive's former colleague, I think the Astfield have a target of 3.5% net. So obviously if you work out what, but hopefully we'll be better than that. So sort of we'd be hoping to make 4-5% net after interest ticket and minimum revenue provision, which is sort of the money we must set aside. So if we make 4-5%, then to make £1 million or so to contribute towards our financial challenge, you can sort of do the math. So sort of 4% return, and you wanted £1 million, you'd need a sort of £25 million portfolio to get to that scale. And I think beyond a certain amount, the ministry will start looking at proportionality. So there is, within the regulations, it's not defined, so there's no arithmetic formula, but it's, you know, when does a commercial fund become disproportionate to the size of the council? And of course this always goes back to spell form, which is the example we've got, thick end of £1 billion worth of investments, and they're a local authority smaller than we are, so but at the moment they're still operating, or they still have that portfolio, they've not, you know, any requirement to divest it. So I guess it's tricky. So it's what can we do quickly at a scale that's going to get the cash flow coming in quickly. So if we buy a commercial property with a sitting tenant, then clearly we're able to do that. Other things are other things we could consider have a potentially slower burn. So what we've done is sort of developed this, you know, 1-12 other sort of criteria we would think about. There's obviously sort of risk, capacity, opportunity. Within the council, we have some internal capacity. The reality is most people, or the huge majority of people, are fully occupied with their day jobs, so we don't really have any, which you would expect in reality, so we don't really have any people who have A, the skills, and B, the time to take these things forward. But clearly people do have some skills which we can use. We've looked at what we can buy in, and again, you know, the Chief Executive's previous contacts are helpful with this. Then clearly we've got to look at risk, so nothing's risk-free, and you know, commercial property, to get £1 million, you might need a portfolio around sort of 20, 25, 30 million. That's a lot of money. There's ways you can mitigate that, sort of through sort of creating a judicious portfolio and mixing geographical area, mixing types of property. But there's no certainty. If economic circumstances suggest that all commercial property across the country falls in value by 10%, then if there's some systemic issue like that, then we will be caught up in that. I think that would be unavoidable. So we have to recognise that those are the sort of risks we're running.
Might I ask a question, please?
Yeah, sure.
Just going back a little bit, when you were talking about sort of staffing and not having the people in place at the moment, is that why today's issue of One Charnwood had a number of positions vacant?
I don't think so. I think there were a number of. I think we've advertised a number of positions in. I think there's quite a few legal services positions. Yeah, so that reflects the fact that there are quite a few interims in legal, and there is a legal restructure, so that's not a direct.
But it's something to do with the property purchasing.
No.
No. Okay.
It's just a restructuring legal. What is more relevant is the 220,000. So that is money to buy in the skills that we need. So clearly we've got some of the property team have appropriate skills, but you know, we've got a portfolio, etc., and they've got day jobs, so it's going to be maybe buying some people in reprioritisation.
So what sort of scale of buying in are we talking about in terms of recruiting new staff in legal services?
Not all decisions have been taken, so we've not necessarily landed on a definitive solution, but what we're looking to do as of now, so I think the leader talked about someone with property skills, so that's a consultant we've got for 2 or 3 days. I don't know what the arrangements are. It's a few days every week or every month over the next few months to help us with things like looking at our assets, things like, so the solar farm idea, you know, it's the existing team have identified that. We've got Limehurst Depot. There are potentially opportunities around the golf course, so it's actually someone with those skills whose job it will be to look at that, hopefully undistracted by other business as usual. We've got ex-colleague from Ashfield, so we've got an arrangement with Ashfield to sort of buy some of his time on a sort of time basis. So that's, again, some of that money will be for that purpose. I think if those arrangements work out and we conclude that we needed to expand our sort of full-time staff, then we would do that and bring forward a proposal either, well, depending on the nature of how significant it is and where we are with its significant budgets, we would bring forward restructure proposals or create new services to enable us to deliver on those things. So the first step is to get the resources in, proof of concept, prove it works. You know, commercial property is a track record, but nonetheless, we've got to prove it to ourselves and prove that we can do it. So, so we will be getting those skills and resources in, probably not permanently immediately, but maybe subsequently, and maybe quite quickly.
So you're only looking at really 1 or 2 FTE equivalents, you know, equivalents.
Yes, I think that's right. I think if the commercial property does take off, then I think we would look to create a small team that would pay for itself through the returns. And again, it's a question as a portfolio ramps up. If you've got 1 building or 2 building, then the sort of rent collections is hopefully not too onerous. But by the time you've got 10, 12 buildings, if you get 10 to 12 properties, then you've probably got some admin around sort of taking calls and renewing leases and fielding inquiries, arranging contractors to sort of deal with those sorts of things, depending what your landlord responsibilities are. I think we'd be looking for a sort of full tenant repairing leases, but you know, you can imagine the admin requirements would increase.
Okay, thanks very much, Simon. I think we've asked you for a detailed sort of reasoning for why you've gone for commercial property investment. I think you've given us one. So thank you very much for doing so.
So apologies slightly for those of particularly observant who looked at the numbers in the evaluation. It's 2 number 7s have appeared, but they do actually correlate 1 to 12, but it was sort of 1 to 7 and then another 7 to 11, but it does 12 in total, so apologies for that.
No problem. Anybody got any questions for Simon?
No, I've done mine.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of reports coming through, so they were sort of cabinet council, so there's obviously through the scrutiny route and questions in council, etc. So there are hopefully good opportunities for the council to have a look at what we're proposing and comment as they feel fit.
I think one thing I would say is it's very useful to see the approach adopted by Rushcliffe in evaluating their commercial property. And were you there at that point?
I'm afraid not. No, reviewing the
concept. So one of the things I would say is that, so they had a whole set of criteria which they rated, and I think it would be very useful for us to develop something similar around. around the size of the investment, a whole bunch of other criteria is incredibly useful. I'm not saying we'd adopt it wholesale as is, obviously we'd have to think about it, but I do think that their particular approach could be quite valuable to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, is that set out on their presentation, Nicky?
It is indeed, yeah.
So we can have a look at that. Yeah, great.
I think what was particularly interesting was that they won the Entrepreneurial Council of the Year award.
Mm. I'm not surprised with
them. When I went on that training course in November, I met somebody from Rushford, which is why I suggested they come, because they were so impressive, and they've been doing this for donkey's years as well.
That guy was just full of energy, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah, yeah, enthusiasm.
Section 151 office assignment.
No, sorry.
No, but he was...
I'm just not sufficiently interested to carry off a suit like that.
It's the way forward.
Okay. Large checks. I don't know.
All right. So
no, I think they have got a track record. So I do live in Rushcliffe, I do sort of follow what they're doing actually. So some of the, I think their big thing actually was to sell their big redevelopment. So they sold their former offices next to Trent Bridge. They presumably told you all this.
Yes, he was talking about that.
I won't repeat. So they do stuff with street wise, which is maybe not.
Yeah.
One for maybe not one for us, but they've over the years I've noticed a lot of through the I've got Rushcliffe News actually, I do keep a pile of them just to reference and for interest, because obviously they are doing things. Yeah.
Okay, all right, let's move on then. Thank you very much. So move on to item 9, staff consultation, officer feedback. This is on pages 16 to 20. So if we go through each one, suggestion one is co-invest with private developers for office development projects in the local economy. And the response from the head of planning is that the response proposal is sound in principle, however, the council's current policy. In the town centre master plan, says we will support major retail and other town centre developments, which, amongst other things, maintains a continuous street frontage activity. New development should be focused towards the areas identified for regeneration. It also talks about how Landhurst Depot is not in the retail core area, but subject to flood risk, being acceptably mitigated might present a better opportunity for redevelopment. It says we should also bear in mind that existing offices are able to change their use to residential and the permitted development rights recently introduced by government. And this has led to offices such as Pennant House being redeveloped for residential use without the need for planning permission, subject to the prior notification process. Just to go back to that question. My idea is to co-invest with private developers for office development projects. Has it really answered the question? I don't think it has, because it's talking about partnership. I'm not convinced that answer has really answered the question as to why we don't work in partnership with private developers.
I think the other 2 points about the long-term decline of the town centre and investing in office developments have definitely answered those questions.
Yeah.
It might help slightly. I think the chap is called Chris Ives, actually. So he's actually started work, and he's visited briefly before Christmas. I think he started some work. He starts in earnest next week, I think. All within his portfolio is all these sort of ideas and this sort of remit. So it is someone we've brought in with property skills to actually provide a bit of focus here. So there's clearly limits to what he would do on his own, but these sort of ideas are things he would address. I guess in practice, it's always a question of priority. So if someone comes to us with an idea, we can think about it. If we were to proactively go out and seek partners, clearly we can do that, but is that the best use of time compared to other opportunities. So I know for a fact that one of the, you know, we've got someone in the town who's interested in doing something with us. So I'm meeting them, I think, this week. So we do engage, and I think as the answer says, it's a reasonable idea. I think for me, it's going to be a question of priority really, and what the opportunities look like.
And obviously, you have to halve your profit. Whatever it is, depending on the arrangement.
My experience of the private sector coming to see is that they're very keen to work with us to particularly make use of our nice, apparently abundant sources of cash to subsidise their schemes. But if there are plausible ideas, then clearly we would look at them. I think as well, some of the sort of thinking we've been doing around commercial property is to make sure that we're very clear what we're doing something for. So things around the town centre have potentially, you know, good policy objectives and outcomes, whereas if we're doing it something purely for a return, then the criteria may be different. And I think a lot of what we spoke about, our commercial property, is pure return, but you know, that's not to say that what's been suggested there should be disregarded.
Okay. The second question was ideas around contributing to council's objectives to generate income, making use of a housing development company to speed up delivery of housing, and the report by the head of strategic and private sector housing is that the report was approved by cabinet in December 2018 to investigate the development of exactly such a company. The detail of the delivery objectives of that company would be outlined in the draft business plan. How it expected that the company could help address the challenges facing the council by supporting the maintenance of the 5-year supply of housing, supply of affordable housing, revenue generation for the council from providing charge of housing management services, development of council owned assets, and delivering growth, new homes, and new opportunities in the borough. So I presume then that although that's been agreed, has anything been undertaken?
Again, it's come up the same answers previously. So that is part of the same remit to look at a housing development company. I mean, our big challenge actually is around land. So there's lots of councils who have done this, and I've been to various conferences on this topic. But the recipe usually starts with, you know, the council puts its land in, and actually we've actually got quite limited land supplies. I think you're looking at Limehurst Depot, which is our sort of principal strategic site. Then after that, it's sort of consideration of Shelthorpe Golf Course, but clearly that's a valued open space within that area, so it's less, maybe less obvious. I think the Ryder Cup's due there in a couple of years.
You're not having the golf course.
Suggestion three, that we flog off all the garage sites. Response by the head of landlord services and head of strategic and private sector housing is that review has been completed of all these old sites and parking spaces. I thought that wasn't the case. I thought we haven't completed the review yet.
I think there's we've got a big, so there's a lot of the database of assets is very, very extensive, so we've not completed the review of all of that. I think there has been a focus by the head of service on specific HRA garage sites. I think there might be some sites that are not HRA, so I'm certainly not going to put my hand up and say we've looked at all these. There has, but the head of service has looked at specific sites within our estates to see what we can do. So I think that sort of answer reflects that. Certainly, you know, completely beyond all our assets. Again, that's something that we'll be looking to accelerates, but it's one of those things that's important, but it's always other urgent matters that supersede it.
I understood that the report on the garage sites was going to be issued in March.
Right.
Don't know where I got that from, but
this would be the relevant head of service, so I'm afraid I can't comment on that.
I can find that out if you want.
So apparently we've generated £237,000 from these garages. The question, which is obviously a fairly significant income stream, a review is expected to be completed in quarter four of 2019-20 and will support decision making around the future of the site.
A lot of them are HRA, housing, they belong to the HRA, so they subsidise the HRA, which is generally in a healthier position than the general fund, so not obviously the exercise is worthwhile, but and again the building is whether things are built as social housing and become part of the HRA or either from commercial basis or affordable might vary, but if it's HRA land then it's not impossible, but it's likely it would be social type HRA housing built on that land.
But I'd be interested to know, I mean, it talks about the annual revenue stream is 237,000. Yeah. What I'd like to know is what is the cost associated with that?
We're not told that.
No.
And also whether that revenue is going up or down.
Yeah.
That'd be useful.
I think it's fairly static. The rents on garages are reviewed pretty much annually. They're reviewed annually, whether they go up annually. I couldn't say it off the top of my head. So the revenue will be increasing. There are some costs. I'm not sure the financial granularity that we would be able to find out, but whether that's necessarily very obvious from the current reporting. I think it will be, I think certainly it will be positive. I believe we spend that amount of money just maintaining garages, which maybe is apparent if you look at them.
Okay, let's move on. Suggestion for, let's see the council offer more services such as an energy supply from a sustainable source or collecting out of waste stock from supermarkets and the council and market stalls. Council could keep money from the sales and the tenants and residents get more products available at a low cost. We also talk about investing in a B&B to provide temporary accommodation to homeless applicants and so on. And what the response says from the head of planning and regeneration is that the idea of an energy supply, becoming an energy supplier, has some potential, not least because it's done in other councils. And there's a consideration of solar farming or wind turbines, a commercial enterprise subject to suitable land being found and permissions obtained. There is currently a food poverty group that meets with representation of a range of agencies. So that seems to cater for some of this to some degree in relation to the homeless. And the market has a policy releasing a weekly market stall for the use of a registered charity bookable through the Market Affairs Office. And the use of a charity stall to promote the local food poverty group would be in line with the market's policy. I take it that's not happening, but it would be in line with the policy were it to happen. And I presume that's been fed back to the people that came up with the ideas in the first place, is that correct?
Right. I mean, that last one may be quite illustrative of what we mean, or I guess what we think about commercialisation. So we could indeed have a market stall to sort of assist with food poverty, etc., which policy-wise maybe was very positive, and it might actually make a small surplus, but in terms of the amount of time we might take it up and running and the level of surplus, it's not going to make any sort of dent at all in our financial position, which is why we've sort of gone down the commercial property route at the moment.
I mean, in a sense, the suggestion box idea is helpful. It's something that I think it's something we should do on a regular basis. Now, we haven't had tremendously good ideas this time around, although we've had some ideas, and most of them are reasonable. But were that to be enhanced, that process, and were we to go out to the residents at some point, in some way, if we could think of a way to do it that's relatively cheap and easy, we might get better ideas.
The civil service used to do this. I don't know whether it still does, but anybody could put in an idea, and if it was worthwhile, it would be evaluated. And then if they saved, I mean, it did come about that they saved hundreds of thousands on some ideas, and you get a percentage of that reward back in.
Sure, sure.
So it does work.
We did that in the private sector as well, that sort of thing. Yeah.
the challenge, though, one of the challenges is once you, as we've demonstrated here, once you ask for ideas, then it's incumbent on us to try and evaluate them, which may take some time, and then feedback. So you are then committing to quite a process of...
Yes,
of
you are. I mean, I think you're right. I think at this stage, when we've got very limited capacity, it's difficult to do this. But I think down the line, we should think very seriously about enhancing this.
I think that's fair enough. They are quite tricky things, suggestion boxes. We did have I think it's before, looking at the councils here, I think it may have been before your time, there was something called Brian's Brainwaves, I was told, which was a suggestion box idea we had. Which elicited.
Who was Brian?
Brian was the chief executive, last but one.
Okay.
So he left in 2008 or 2009. But there was, so in the sort of, in that preceding 5 years, there was this Brian's Brainwaves, which was a suggestion box idea. But to be honest, it's one of those, it's a tricky area. So when I was at PwC, we did some work on suggestion boxes and the idea of questions and, you know, framing a question to get an answer, because they ran it and found that they got, you know, the questions, suggestions like we should have croissants, hot croissants in reception to create a good impression, which is sort of fine, but then sort of what for and where does that get us? So there was quite a bit of work we did on that, which was quite interesting, if I can remember it all.
Yeah, so maybe that think tank idea is where that can be filtered out, so you only get the...
So I only picked up at the end, but yes, you know, I think...
Get the dross out, so you've got some...
Well, yes, but it's sort of encouraging people to ask, you know, if you've got a business problem, then if you phrase the question, you get ideas how to solve a problem rather than sort of not quite random things, interesting idea forward.
If we're to go forward with getting more input from the staff, then I think there should almost be a format in which we ask them to do this, so it's not just... I've had a brainwave.
Yes.
If I've had a brainwave, what are the benefits that the council
if you do this at 3M, it works even better than that, because the way that they do it is the engineers have 20% of the time to work on whatever they want.
Yeah.
So they can then go away and develop an idea. Now, if they develop an initial idea that's quite good, they then get internal funding, to develop the idea further. And it goes through a series of stages and gates. It's called the stage gate model. And it goes through a series of stages and gates. And I could see something like that in a smaller form, which is what that think tank was.
Yes, it's exactly what it is.
Operating here in the long term.
Potentially, I mean, just on that, my immediate reaction was I don't think we've got anyone here who has 20% of their time to do what they like. Well, hopefully they don't. But
that was for engineers, so it's a special class of folks. It's not everybody.
Pharmaceutical.
Yeah. I think there's clearly something in the idea. I think it's not necessarily as straightforward as having a box on reception and getting slips in it.
The other thing about 3M, of course, is that one of the big strategies of that company is to generate ideas for development.
Yes.
Mm.
So it's actually a mindset that's in that company.
Yeah, sure.
Which is what we're talking about the council doing.
Exactly.
But what I'm also thinking is that we have 52 councillors, and we are from very diverse... backgrounds and experience, so we should be able to generate
isn't that what this panel effectively is?
But there's only six of us out of 52.
Yeah, a couple of officers in.
Down the line, that's precisely what we'd do. Yeah. It's an easy workshop to run.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks very much. So we're now on to an exempt item. So it's recommended that members of the public be excluded from the meeting. Yeah. Yes.
sure, wants to stay.
I am actually allowed to stay.
We could always bring in a sleeping bag if you want.
Yeah.
So members of the public excluded from the meeting during consideration of the following items on the grounds that it would involve the likely disclosure of exempt information
as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of schedule 12.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's consider that the
dinner will still be warm between the dog.
Outweighs the quality of the causing information. Thank you.
Turn the recording on.
Okay.
Back in public session.
Okay, so on to item 12, actions timetable for review. Just to confirm the actions for the meeting, for the next meeting. The next meeting is on Thursday the 5th of March, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So at that meeting we consider the panel's final report for submission, so we will have to have a final report, a draft final report for that particular meeting. So my suggestion is, after consultation with Nikki, is that we do a bit of an email exchange over the coming month to work out what can we set up an email group, and we'll set up an email group and we'll have a bit of an exchange about what our recommendations should be. My suggestion is that we all pile in with 4 to 6 recommendations each.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that. Let's all put forward the idea of 4 to 6 recommendations each, and then we'll boil those down into a set of coherent recommendations that we can all agree on.
Perhaps if the first email that comes out to the group actually repeats that, so that we know what's expected.
We'll do that.
I'll include the minutes, because there's the formal, informal minutes which were not public.
Yeah.
So, and then there'll be obviously the formal minutes from the last meeting and this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably as far as we can get tonight, but I think we've had a lot of food for thought actually.
Yes, we have.
Today.
It's been good.
Well, thank you to Nikki for organising the people to come.
Okay, colleagues, thanks very much for your time. We'll turn the meeting here.
Yes, of course.